Hello, Nitro Beard fans, and welcome to another edition of the Power Hour. I'm your host, Wes Gardner. Of course, we got a fun show lined up for you this week. It's going to be a pretty quick one, I think, and there's a pretty good reason. The first segment is going to be about a WWE house show that happened here in Waco, and me and my girlfriend were actually there. I'm going to go down the match list, kind of tell you all the shenanigans and goings-on and some really just fun little tidbits, and also I'm going to kind of cover the big new main event, or what could be the main event at WrestleMania with the whole Daniel Bryan Triple H thing. Going to touch on that a little bit. Got a few questions, but the questions really started resolving around what the second segment will be about. And that's going to be a game that's kind of got good and bad press lately. Just came out fresh off the market. It's only been out a day, and I've played through it. It's, well, we'll get to that in the second segment, but the game is Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes, and it's kind of getting some heat, and I'm going to kind of cover that. I'm going to cover where I was coming from whenever I started playing it, kind of what was I expecting, did it live up to expectations, does it feel like Metal Gear, kind of things like that. So it's going to be a lot of fun, but hey, that being said, let's just jump right into the WWE. We had a house show here in Waco. A lot of fun. If you remember last year, I did a podcast about the house show here in Waco, and that's whenever The Undertaker came back after about a year hiatus. He actually came back in the Waco house show last year, which was pretty cool. I know he lives, I want to say he lives about an hour from here. He lives on the outskirts of Dallas or something. Pardon me. And just really cool moment. There were some cool moments this time. I have the match listing right here. Let's see. Yeah, the match listing right here. Kind of the very first opening match was kind of a gag match to or it wasn't necessarily a gag match, but had Mark Henry, which was awesome. I haven't seen Mark Henry live before, so he's one of those guys that was kind of on the bucket list that I wanted to see them wrestle before they retired. And Mark Henry, he stole the show. It was maybe a 2-minute match. He did his slam. I can't even remember who it was against. Like, that's how memorable his opponent was. I actually think it was Damian Sandow. Yeah, it was Damian Sandow. And he got all uppity, saying that Texas was for dweebs or something. Whatever he talks about. But Mark Henry was a lot of fun to watch, and you could tell he was kind of at home. You know, he's a Texas boy, so the Texas crowd really loved him, and he played it up really well. And the next match was Darren Young versus Titus O'Neil. And that was probably the funniest thing of the night, because Titus O'Neil comes out with his whistle and says how nasty Waco is and how dumb the people are, and which probably isn't too far from the truth. No, I'm kidding. now my friends are going to listen and be like, hey, fuck you, pal. But but no, Titus was just getting heat, right? He was just saying, you know, I'm the one that carried Darren Young and Primetime Players. Oh, if he came out here, I could wrestle him right now and show him who's boss. Darren Young comes out, the match is about 12 seconds long, pins him, and then they leave. Just hilarious. So it was good to see both of them. It was my first time to see them wrestle singles matches live, so it was a lot of fun. Last house show, they wrestled a tag match, which was fun. I mean, they're great competitors, so it's always fun to see them. And the match of the night happened next, and it was wicked, and that was the Shield versus the Wyatt family. And God, those guys are good. Like, my girlfriend's not into pro wrestling at all. She thinks it's silly. I try to explain it to her that, you know, the silliness is kind of part of it. Like, I like it genuinely, but I also like it ironically, you know, and I bet a lot of people listening right now can kind of say the same thing if you listen to the wrestling segments and kind of in on it, that, you know, the sticky stories are kind of what it's about, right? So, you know, whenever I explained it to her that way, she was like, oh, okay, I can kind of see this, but she was way into the Shield versus Wyatt match, because those guys are unbelievable, and it was so cool. It was the first time to see both of them live, and they had a hell of a match. Like, this match could have been on a pay-per-view, and I think it went on for about 30 minutes. I mean, it was a solid match, and you know, Seth Rollins flipping everywhere, Dean Ambrose doing his crazy shenanigans, and Roman Reigns is massive. I just want to throw that out there. That's a big old Samoan dude. We were in the 11th row, but they actually walked by us whenever they did their entrance from around the auditorium there. They actually walked by us, and good God, like, I walk by, you know, it's funny because, you know, I've gotten bigger. I'm right around the 200 pound mark and did the bodybuilding thing. And, you know, there's an old Power Hour about that. But, you know, I was about the size, maybe a little bit smaller than Seth Rollins. So, you know, seeing him and Dean Ambrose, I was like, yeah, they're pro wrestling size, right? But Roman Reigns is just massive. And yeah, for a guy that big to be able to do the things he does is pretty impressive. But yeah, they had the match of the night. No doubt. Let's see. The next one was a Divas match, which was actually pretty good. It was the first time Layla was in action for about 6 months, I want to say. I think she left in September. Had some personal stuff going on. And she looked good. She was teamed up with Natalya. Eva Marie was teamed up with Natalya. And then Layla was with Alicia Fox. That's right. And of course, the highlight for me was Natalya, because she's an amazing wrestler, and she ended the match on a sharpshooter, so I was happy. And your girlfriend got into that match, too, because she saw the Divas on the E. She heard about the Divas from a friend who watched the E show, Total Divas, so, you know, that nice 6 degrees of separation. I guess that whole co-marketing thing is working, so. But yeah, she loved that one, and then, let's see, we had the Usos versus the Rhodes Scholars. Or I guess it's called like Brotherly Love now, or the Brothers, the Brotherhood, or I can't remember. Who knows? Versus the Real Americans, which was great to see Antonio Cesaro in action. And they all looked good as well. They were entertaining. That's the thing my girlfriend kept saying, was like how entertaining these tag matches were. And, you know, there was a lot more energy and a lot more going on, and a lot more to watch. And then it was funny because the two main events... the first one was a Sheamus versus Alberto Del Rio match was horrible, but I've never understood the hype about either one. You know, Sheamus, doesn't really do anything for me. And then Alberto Del Rio really doesn't do anything for me. Like every time I think about him, I just think about him on Botchamania nonstop. And that pretty much sums up what I think of Alberto Del Rio. Like they're fine, but the entire crowd was bored out of their mind. And then if we didn't think it could get more boring, the main event was a cage match, and somehow it was John Cena versus Randy Orton, but somehow they made a cage match boring. And it was real boring. Like, we were tempted to leave early. That's how boring it was. Nothing really happened. I mean, which is kind of the... you know, what is going to happen? We know Orton's going to keep the belts until WrestleMania. You know, they're not going to take really dangerous bumps or risks in a cage match at a house show when they both are primed for WrestleMania. So it was just kind of a lot of rest holds. Someone would sort of climb up part of the cage and then kind of jump off and, like, land on their feet. Or, you know what I mean, just weird stuff. And they tried to... The actual surprise of it was it looked like Cena was going to win by climbing. And then Randy Orton was going to win by the going out the door. They were doing that. I can't remember the first time they did that. I think it was like, was it Bret Hart in there? I don't know. I need to go watch it on the network, I guess. But the whole photo finish of someone climbing out of the cage and someone coming out of the door. But as that was happening, the lights shut off and Bray Wyatt's music hit. And the Wyatt family came out and helped Orton win. So that was a neat like swerve. But it was kind of expected, but kind of not, you know. But yeah, that match was boring as sin. And yeah, girlfriend hated those matches. Thought they were stupid. And I thought they were stupid too. And then I explained to her, and that's why Daniel Bryan should win everything. Because not only is he a good technical wrestler, but he's entertaining. Because we had watched, I had the WWE Network on. I think I had an old episode of Raw on before we went. That way I could show my girlfriend, okay, this is these people, they don't like them, and, you know, kind of a quick Cliff Notes version of what's happening, so that way she knew kind of who everyone was. And yeah, she thought Cena and Orton was boring as sin, so that's why I love her. But but yeah, it was a fun house show. And I mean, the Shield versus Wyatt's made that house show. That's probably the best wrestling match I've ever seen in person. Yeah, I went to a Raw to where it was like Dolph Ziggler versus The Miz versus Chris Jericho. I think that might be tied with it, because that match was pretty impressive, even though The Miz was in it. I give Miz a hard time, but it was cool. I mean, it was a lot of fun, and, you know, with just seeing everybody there, and, you know, and, I mean, to be fair, Cena and Orton both stayed a long time after the show was over and signed stuff for people. Excuse me. So, you know, it went well. It was a fun little show. But, yeah, as far as the WrestleMania prep, as far as Daniel Bryan versus Triple H, apparently the winner of that match is going to go on to be in the main event of WrestleMania as well. So they're going to have two matches in one night. This could go extremely well, or this could be the nail in the coffin to where I stop watching. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, what does my gut instinct say that Daniel Bryan's going to win the Triple H match? And then during the title match, Triple H is going to try to screw Daniel Bryan out of winning, but then something's going to happen, or Batista's going to hit him, or something's going to happen, and then Daniel Bryan's going to win the belt. And that's, you know, because on the dirt sheets, they were talking about, you know, Daniel Bryan, what their goal for WrestleMania is to have the loudest yes chant, like Guinness Book of World Records style. So the best way to do that would have him win two matches in one night and have him win the belt as kind of a reward. But if Triple H wins that stupid fucking match, I don't even know. Like, I don't even know what I... Like, it goes past a certain point to where, you know, you almost kind of expect it to happen, but do they really have the balls to be that stupid? You know, because if there is one thing that would be worse than watching Batista and Randy Orton fight in the main event of WrestleMania, it's watching Randy Orton, Batista, and Triple H fight in the main event of WrestleMania. Like, that'll be the most mundane, boring-ass, terrible, just terrible. I can't even imagine. But apparently WWE's doing some silly marketing stuff anyway, to where they're showing the simulation of WWE 2K14, and they're doing the main event of WrestleMania, and it has Daniel Bryan with Randy Orton and Batista, and Daniel Bryan ends up winning. So either WWE is trolling its audience right now, or they have that planned, you know. But who knows? WrestleMania's just, what, 20-something days away? You know, we'll find out. We will find out, I guess. I don't know. God, I hope Triple H doesn't win that match. Ugh. But yeah, and the Cena-Wyatt rivalry is going to be pretty good. I can actually see them working really well together. They used to be college football players, and it's going to be a physical match. And I think Bray Wyatt can really work with anyone. So I'd like to see how kind of the more ground-focused, rough-and-tumble, just, you know, basically Cena style. I'd like to see Bray Wyatt kind of adapt to it. And you know they work well together anyway, but on WrestleMania I think it'll be something special. But yeah, that's really it for wrestling. And I'll do one question real quick. Let me, bring up Twitter, because the rest of the questions have to do with what I'll talk about in the second segment. Let me bring up Twitter. Sorry for the kind of silence, if my mouse will work. I need to clean my mouse, by the way. It's doing that weird thing to where it'll click, but then not, like, actually click on anything? I don't know. But, oh, here it is. Good old Marco Flores. What's up, brother? He asks, not sure if I already asked this, but are you going to round up a crew for the Power Hour? If so, where can I sign up? Well, without giving too much away, changes will be happening to the Power Hour. Once some things get ironed out, once some schedules get settled in, once some things start happening, then... because I'm recording this on a separate day than what I recorded the last week, and separate from what I recorded the last week. So Power Hour right now is very much just play it by feel. Kind of, when do I have an open time in my schedule? Do I have a 2 hours where I don't have my daughter, to where, you know, I can get this done and post it up? And, you know, I'd like to put it out on Fridays, or I'd like to put it out on Mondays, or, I mean, right now, today's Wednesday. So, you know, just right now, it's not, the schedule's not solidified enough to actually be like, yeah, I'd like these people to be here and these people to be here. But it's funny you should ask for a place, because let's just say you may get a direct message at Twitter pretty soon. You know, I'm a fan of Nerd in the Bay. What can I say? So, yeah, that being said, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back, and all of next segment, we're going to be talking about Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes, and maybe just some sprinkling some Metal Gear talk just in general. But yeah, we will be right back. Welcome back, guys. This is going to be a really special segment for me. As you all know, I'm a really, really, really big Metal Gear fan. So this might be a little segment, kind of how on Nitrobeard we did a Deus Ex retrospective podcast, which I'm still super proud of. Honestly, that might be one of my favorite podcasts I've ever been a part of. And, you know, just anytime I do a retrospective on a series that I love, like I wish I actually had more people to do a full Metal Gear retrospective kind of podcast. And honestly, I might, like whenever Phantom Pain comes out or something like that, we might make that happen, actually. That sounds like a lot of fun and a really good idea. But this one's going to be kind of a taste, I guess, which is kind of ironic if you consider that Metal Gear Ground Zeroes is kind of a taste of what Metal Gear Solid 5 will be. But there's been a lot of, I guess, controversy about Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes. Originally, Metal Gear Solid 5 was one project, but it had two separate kind of mini-stories that would go together as a cohesive whole. And one was Ground Zeroes, and the other was Phantom Pain. And I remember the announcement of Metal Gear Solid 5 was very confusing for that reason, because I was like, well, which one is the game? Like, which one's Metal Gear Solid 5? And they were like, oh no, both of them are. I'm like, that doesn't make sense to me. But now it's a little bit different. I guess either they're trying to get some, you know, good quarterly fiscal numbers or something at Konami, or I don't really know what the decision was on how to break the project very much in part, you know, in two parts. But Ground Zero seems to be kind of what the Metal Gear Solid 2 demo disc was. And I bring that up because the big controversy right now about it is Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes is a very short taste of what MGS5 is going to present. So is it worth it? You know, downloads on Xbox 360 and PS3 are $19.99. Downloads on PS4 and Xbox One are $29.99. And I want to say that that's also the price for the physical copy. So $30. And, you know, one of the questions that I got was, is the game as short as the rumors have said? And the rumors have said anywhere from people could beat it if they skipped all the cutscenes and knew exactly where to go in like 25, 30 minutes. But usually your first playthrough, if you just do the story mission itself, takes about an hour, hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on kind of what you do, if you get caught a lot, you know, things like that. And the answer is yes. That is almost exactly how long the main mission is. But now here's the big qualifier. But that is A-okay, because the amount of side content you get to unlock after that can easily quadruple it. And I know for me, I will probably be spending about 15 hours, I would say, playing this, just based on kind of everything you can unlock, everything you can find, all the different trophies you can get. The area itself in Ground Zeroes is not quite a sandbox. I see that kind of thrown around. Well, I'll put it this way. Not in a sandbox that you would think of. Not like Grand Theft Auto. It's not that big. It's not that, you know... apparently, Phantom Pain is supposed to be about that big. But Ground Zeroes is just one camp called Camp Omega. And Big Boss ends up going there to rescue two characters from Peace Walker. So this is a direct follow-up to Peace Walker. I think it happens 5 years afterwards, 4 years, something like that. So it takes place about 10 years after Portable Ops, about 4 years after Peace Walker, if my math is right. And so it's a direct sequel. Kiefer Sutherland does play Big Boss. And just as a side note, because I got a question about this, and I'll hit it right now. Like, does Kiefer Sutherland sound like Big Boss? Yes and no. He does not sound like David Hayter. But after 5 or 6 lines of hearing Kiefer play Big Boss, to me it actually sounds more like Big Boss. Like, as a separate entity from Solid Snake or Liquid Snake or, you know, Solidus Snake. So it fits. It fits really well. There's a slight cadence. You can tell that Kiefer Sutherland probably listened to tons of David Hayter and did a few inflections here and there that are just really nice. Like, it's he'll do the, let's see if I can, I'll take a drink real quick and I'll do my Big Boss impression, or my Solid Snake, but he'll, God, I haven't done this in forever. I remember doing this on an old episode of Nitro Beard. But you know, Snake always had that kernel. You know, that sort of high-pitched, gravelly thing, like, a hind D, what's a Russian gunship doing here? Like, that sort of, you know, he would bring it out like that. And every once in a while, Kiefer would hit a note like that. And it was this nice little nod. But it worked. Totally worked. And Big Boss now sounds a little bit more standoffish. He sounds a little bit more, you know, that he's seen some shit. Because if you played Metal Gear Solid 3, if you played Peace Walker, he did see some shit. So he has to protect himself now. And he feels a little more subdued, I guess you would say. And the tone of the whole game is kind of like that. It's more somber, and it feels more like a, I guess like a Splinter Cell. You know, it's not as wacky as, you know, Metal Gear Solid 4 was. There's still some sense of humor stuff in there, so don't get me wrong, it's not all serious and things like that. I mean, hell, the guy has a skull for a face, and his name is Skullface. I mean, so you can't, you know, that should tell you everything you need to know. But yeah, like, Kiefer fits really well. The game itself is the best playing Metal Gear ever. It plays so well. It's super easy to pick up and play. And I think the thing that really throws people off about it is, yeah, it's $30, or, you know, yeah, it's $30 basically, right? $30 or $40. So, is there enough content to warrant that price? Well, that depends on where you're coming from. Because if you're just looking at this is your first Metal Gear, what's Metal Gear about? Is this Metal Gear Solid 5? Oh, this is the full game. You're going to get pissed. Oh, look, the new Metal Gear is only $30. Let me buy it. And then you play it for an hour. You think the one objective that you need to do just is starting like 10 other objectives. That's not necessarily the case. You just do the one thing. You find prisoners, and that's it. So, yeah, if you do completely know where to go and you skip all the cutscenes and things like that, you can beat it in about 30 minutes. Probably even less. If you're really good. But I'll tell you where I'm coming from for it. I bought Zone of the Enders, the Kojima Productions game with a, like, awesome game. I bought Zone of the Enders on PlayStation 2. Because it came with a Metal Gear Solid 2 demo. It came with a tanker, right? I played that tanker mission, that demo disc, for probably 20-some-odd hours. I played it so many times because I was playing it as kind of something to whet my appetite for the full game of, you know, Metal Gear Solid 2. Well, the way I view it and the way my mind works, I spent $40... on Zone of the Enders. Or actually, I'll put it this way. I spent $40 on the Metal Gear Solid 2 demo, and they gave me a cool free robot game. You know what I mean? So that's the way I viewed it. So whenever it was like $20 for a downloadable PlayStation 3 like prologue to Metal Gear Solid 5 that you can replay over and over, unlock trophies, has kind of a big, big environment. Like, I would say Camp Omega is about the size of the tanker on the Metal Gear Solid 2 demo. So, put that into perspective, was the $20 download worth it for me? Oh, hell yeah, it was. Like, after I get done with this and after I put it online, I'm going to go play more. It's just so much fun. There's so many guards. There's like a sense of verticality, I guess. Yeah, here are the things that I like about it. Like, a sense of verticality. You can climb ladders. You can, you know, go under buildings. These are all kind of Metal Gear staples, I guess. They were mainly more so introduced in Peace Walker and maybe Metal Gear Solid 4, Metal Gear Online, kind of the multiplayer stuff. But they're used so well here. And it gave me a sense of, like, this was a, like, Splinter Cell Chaos Theory mixed with Tenchu. And Tenchu is one of my favorite series of all time. They're clunky, the games are a mess, but man, Tenchu, there's nothing like it. And it's like a mix of those two and Peace Walker, because, you know, it takes place right after, it still has the same feel, it's the same characters, it takes place in the 70s, so it has this vibe, right? But I was way into it. The first time I played through the demo, or Ground Zeroes, that's the thing, though. I keep calling it the demo, even though Ground Zeroes is a full retail product. But it's a preface to Metal Gear Solid The Phantom Pain. Like, I realize that. This is getting me introduced to how will the game play. What can I look forward to as far as weapon choices? What can I look forward to as far as the way Snake feels? Just the little things, kind of the minutia. And for what it is, it's perfect. I think it's great. Would I have liked like two or three other main story missions? Sure. I think everyone would. But do I feel gypped out of $20? Not at all. You know, and I think that's a big deal. Like, because the things I like, yeah, it has that sense of verticality, but probably my two favorite things, and they go hand in hand. One, there is no radar in the sense of look on the map, you see a cone of vision, you know, that the guard has, and then you watch where he walks, and whenever he turns around, he doesn't know you're there. Like, that type of stuff's gone. You can use your binoculars that you get to mark enemies. And what that means, basically, if you've played, like, a Battlefield game or something, you can actually mark enemies across the map. So if you keep your binoculars on an enemy for a long time, what will happen is a little red triangle will kind of go over their head. And you're able to see that no matter where you're at on the map. So let's say they're a half mile away. If you zoom in your binoculars well enough and you get to mark them, then you know where they're at all the time. And that works with every guard. So what I did first time I played through, I went and I marked every single guard, you know, and it's very big on situational awareness that way, because you have to pay attention to your surroundings. It's not necessarily here's the overhead camera and I'm going to rely on the map and the map's going to tell me when I can run this way or this way. That's not true. You know, guards will do different things. It's raining on the main story mission, so some guards will actually start catching pneumonia and then go inside. Or they'll start sneezing. You know, some of them might be, like, scared of thunder. There's, like, these little nuanced things, and the sound design is incredible. The game looks incredible. Even on PS3, which is what I'm playing it on, it looks unbelievable. I can't imagine how good it looks on a PS4. The game's just so much fun, and, like, you can get different weapons instead of, like, having a loadout screen, like in Peace Walker, like, oh, I'm going to take these guns and this ration and these smoke grenades. You find everything on the field of battle, almost like Metal Gear Solid 4. So, you know, as you take someone out, then they have a different gun than you have. You can swap them out. You can carry both of them, like, however you want to do it. You can switch out your handguns, you can switch out what type of grenades you have, you can pick up empty clip magazines and then use those as a distraction if you want to. You can go interrogate people, so you have CQC, your close quarters combat, and you can actually kind of hold someone hostage, I guess, and then start interrogating them. Be like, okay, tell me everything you know. And what they're going to tell you is they're like, oh, I'm pretty sure I saw a cassette tape in the trash bin over there on the right. And I don't know what it says, but please don't hurt me. And then you can choose, do you want to knock him out? Do you want to strangle him and kill him? Do you want to, you know, what do you want to do with this guy? And you can use him as a human shield, like whatever you want to do, which is really cool. It's kind of this nice Deus Ex sense of how am I going to get through this area? But that, you know, so they tell you where to find collectibles. And they tell you, oh, there's a, you know, gun stash over a few blocks that way. And it's just a really dynamic thing because all of the information in the game, you're getting it from inside the game, right? You're getting it from playing the game. You're not necessarily, you have a map, don't get me wrong, like you have a map that can mark your main objectives. You can put marks anywhere on the map, but if you choose to do so, you don't need to use any of it. You know, you can just use the situation that you're in. You can use your own two eyes. You can look around, use your binoculars. You can play it almost like you're a scavenger. Right, and that's how I played it. I also played it, every Metal Gear I play the first time through, I try to kill as many people as possible, but I try to do it quietly. Like, I play it like the same way I do Splinter Cell games. And the game's so fun doing it that way, because you have to outsmart your opponent, and the AI in this is a lot better than what Metal Gear is known for. And that actually adds to the situational awareness, because if you mess up once, man, you don't have a lot of time to go find cover. There is a new system, I guess they call it reflex mode, to where if you're spotted, you have an amount of time, probably ranging anywhere from, I'd say, 5 to 9 or 10 seconds, where you're in slow motion. And you have time to react. So you have time to kind of get out of the field of view. You have time to pull out a gun off somebody. You have time to, like, grab somebody. Whatever you need to do in that amount of time, depending on how close you are, the time will either be longer or shorter, depending on how close you are to the person that saw you. So there's a lot of just really interesting, nuanced things that Ground Zeroes is doing that are a lot of fun. And the replayability, because of that, for me at least, is going to be off the charts. Like, I can definitely see myself, if I can't decide what I want to play, I can see myself kind of going into Metal Gear and just fucking around, right? And that's kind of, it's almost a benefit that way, that it's quote-unquote a demo, because there's no sense of, well, I need to progress further in the story, so I don't feel like doing that, so I better not play it. You know, I always get that way. Like, I don't feel like, you know, if I play a game, I really don't want to just waste time. Like, you know, I still have Tales of Zillia and stuff like that. I would love to just go in and just grind, you know, and I do from time to time. But then I feel guilty that I'm not progressing in the story, and, oh, well, this isn't an RPG, and they did it for the story, so I guess I better experience it. Well, with a Metal Gear demo, which is kind of what they're promoting it as, there's none of that fear. You can just go and dick around as many times as you want. Because, yeah, it only takes an hour to get the full story. But at the end of the day, who cares? Like, hell, you can read what happens in Ground Zeroes in 4 sentences. You know? And because it's kind of a big deal, but not really. It does have a twist at the end, but not really. Like, if you know where Phantom Pain is going, then you kind of know what's happening in Ground Zeroes anyway. So the whole, you know, oh, the story only takes an hour, it's like, well, shit, technically any Metal Gear is kind of like that, right? Like, if you skip all the cutscenes, they're barely video games. So I don't see why this is too much different. Now, do I agree with the fact that should people be up in arms that they're charging $30 for this? $30 seems kind of high, I'll admit. I kind of just view that as next generation tax. You know what I mean? Like, the graphics are better, it took more money to develop it, so hey, we're going to charge 10 extra bucks. This is not the first time that's happened. You know, I think that happens every single console cycle. There's kind of that, you know, people joke about the Square Enix tax, or, you know, the 3DS Nintendo tax, or, you know, stuff like that. But, yeah, $30 is a little steep. I'll agree. Like, if it was 20 bucks, download only, on PS4 and Xbox One, totally worth it. And then if it was like $9.99 or even $14.99 on PS3 and Xbox 360, that would be the sweet spot. Like I said, do I feel gypped out of 20 bucks? Not at all, because I'm going to keep playing Ground Zeroes over and over and over again. And it's going to be one that I'll kind of binge this week, and then I'll take a month off of it and be like, you know what I should play again? I should load up Ground Zeroes. And then I'll play it again just to fuck with it, you know, just to kind of get my Metal Gear fix. And it kind of came at a perfect time because I was wanting to replay Peace Walker anyway. And this feels like a more organic Peace Walker. And I would love it if they did a full, you know, in the new Fox engine, which is beautiful, if they did a full remake of Peace Walker. I think it'd be great. But it ain't going to happen. But a guy can dream, right? But yeah, a lot of the questions that I have here, yeah, a lot of them are about Kiefer Sutherland. Did he get the voice right? I would say yeah. He actually sounds more like Big Boss as a separate entity than what David Hayter would. Okay, also another question I got. Do you think David Hayter is actually going to be in Metal Gear Solid 5? Yes. No doubt in my mind. He's going to be in it. That's why if you ask him, you know, people are going to say, are you playing Big Boss? He's like, no, I'm not. They didn't ask me to. But he never says that he's not part of the project at all. You know what I mean? Like, I'm almost convinced that he has something in there with it. And I mean, you have to think, right whenever Peace Walker happened, I think a little bit before, like 2 years before Peace Walker, is when they did the L'Enfant Terrible, which is where they actually made the clones of Solid Snake, Solidus, and Liquid. So the clones are alive, right? So something's gonna happen. They gotta build up towards Metal Gear 1 whenever Solid Snake takes out Big Boss. You know, it's gonna happen. David Hayter's in the game. I'm almost convinced, man, that David Hayter's in the game. But yeah, there's that one. But yeah, a lot of the questions are about the length. Do you feel gypped? You know, the length is what it is. It's for the main story, you're looking at about an hour, maybe an hour and a half. But then you have five side missions. And then one of them are console exclusive, depending on which ones you get. Since I have a PS3, I basically get a cool remade version of the demo of Metal Gear Solid 1, which is kind of a nice throwback, because I remember getting that demo. That's another one. Hell, if you want to look at that, and people are like, oh, they said that you could beat it in 20 minutes if, you know, you skipped all the cutscenes. It's like, you could beat the Metal Gear Solid 1 demo in about 3 minutes if you knew where to go. You know, if you knew the patrols and that camera right near the staircase and, you know, or the sleeping guard that you could just crawl under on the bottom floor, you could beat it in no time flat. And then people are going to argue, well, you didn't have to pay for that demo. Bullshit, you didn't. You either had to buy a pizza at Pizza Hut, which is like, what, $8? Or you had to get the official PlayStation magazine, which was like $9.99 because it came with a demo disc, like $8.99 or $9.99. So let's take a look at that. For Metal Gear Solid 1, the demo, you had to spend $10 for 3 minutes of gameplay. So, $20 in this generation for a minimum half an hour. And probably, like I said, I'm going to be playing it probably about 10 hours. That's a bargain. You know, I mean, arguably the PlayStation demo disc did have more demos, but they were all worthless. You know, I think the only other good demo on there was Toomba, which was an awesome demo, by the way. But it was stuff like the Grand Stream Saga. Like, I remember that demo disc super well. It was one of the, I think it was Rally Sport or Rally Sport 2. So, you know, once again, I paid $10 for a Metal Gear Solid 1 demo. So whenever you put that price into perspective, it's not so bad. But now we're in such a day and age of DLC and, you know, paid features that should have been in the game in the first place. I think it's kind of twisted everyone up. Is $20 still a little steep for a 2-hour game? Yeah, but the replayability is so big and so good in it, and the game plays so well, and it's so much fun to actually just go sneak and shoot and hide. And it feels like Metal Gear, and it feels like the new generation of Metal Gear, which it just has me super stoked. But yeah, that's about it, man. I really like it. But I am a big Metal Gear apologist. I know how dumb they are. I know Kojima's insane. I know the games don't really play that well, considering, you know, top-down views and things like that. They take a lot of time and a lot of button presses to get good at, and you know, I understand that. All the criticism that's leveled at the Metal Gear series, I agree with. Like, the story is just ridiculous over the top. It's complex for its own good. Everyone's related to each other, because if there's someone that you meet in the 70s, they're probably a parent or a grandparent of somebody that you meet in the original Metal Gear Solid. Like, it's just a 6 degrees of separation thing, right? And, you know, it's that old storytelling meme that 6 people rule the world. And that's basically Metal Gear in a nutshell. Like, there's, you got the Patriots, you got Outer Heaven. Just those two things right there envelope every single character in the Metal Gear franchise. So, you know, it's silly, but it's good, man. It's a lot of fun. But if you're waiting, you could wait on a sale for Ground Zeroes. I mean, I would. Some people are redboxing it. You could do that too. But I think everyone should play it. I think everyone should play it because it's a lot of fun. It feels really good to play. It's kind of taking a new direction for Metal Gear. It's still Metal Gear at its heart, but it does feel a little bit more survivalist. It feels a little bit more, you know, seat of your pants, kind of instinctual, let me be aware of my surroundings, like what's going on, and you feel more like a covert ops badass. And, you know, it's just a lot of fun. I keep saying that over and over again, but it really is. And like I said, $20, I feel like it was a solid purchase. And, you know, the people that are just complaining about length entirely, that doesn't buy much merit because there's so many side things to do. There's so many things to collect. You can collect cassette tapes and storytelling elements. And, you know, you can, it gives you a grade at the end of it. You can actually You know, whenever you get a headshot from a certain distance, it'll be like, this is a new record for headshots. You know, it keeps track of things like that. So you can go and try to better yourself, do a better time, run through, take everyone out with not being, you know, not being alerted. That right there will take you 4 hours. Just going all around the base, not being detected, that'll take you a while. Just a lot of really fun stuff, but it has that nature and that feel and that essence of Metal Gear in it. And, I mean, I love it. Plays really well, and I do recommend it. I know even on free-to-play, I know they were talking about the length of it and, you know, should we be charging this much for it and things like that. And I can see their side of it, too. But I'm telling you, coming from not necessarily a Metal Gear aficionado, but I know way too much about this series. You know, I'm that type of guy that I wish my brain would forget that stuff and fill it with useful information. But that's how much I know about it. But coming from me, man, it's good. It's worth it. You know, especially if you have a PS4, you got to play it and tell me how good it looks. Because on the PS3, it looks unbelievable. Never drops in frame rate. The sounds are incredible. It's just plays so well. But that's about it. That's it for me, man. This has been a lot of fun with the Power Hour. Thank you for the questions. They were all very Metal Gear based. I actually missed one question. What's your favorite Metal Gear of all time? And that is Metal Gear Solid 3 Subsistence. I really loved Snake Eater whenever I played it, the original Metal Gear Solid 3. But the top-down camera, just me and it didn't get along. But whenever they came out with Subsistence, they did Metal Gear Online. They put Metal Gear 1 and 2, the MSX ports on there. Just the game, that changed the way I viewed Metal Gear forever. You know, and, well, literally, I guess, because it was more of a third-person view. But it was so good. The story is incredible. If you play one Metal Gear game, make that be the one. You know, the HD version, if you have the current gen systems or anything like that, get the HD versions. They're incredible. Like, because it's a remake of Subsistence. So that's by far my favorite Metal Gear game. But, I mean, if Ground Zeroes is anything to go by, Phantom Pain might be up there as well. So, because Ground Zeroes by itself, it's not necessarily a full game. I'll never think it's a full game, but it's so good. It's so much fun, and you guys should definitely check it out. But that's my time. I'm Wes Gardner. Thank you for listening. As always, definitely go on NitroBeer.com. Check out the front page. We got more videos. I know Matt Pierce just posted up a video. He was looking at Need for Speed Pro Street on the Wii. Just a lot of cool stuff going on. Tons of podcasts, just all sorts of free entertainment for you because we love you to death. Listen to Free to Play. Listen to the Jumpcast. I'm glad you're listening to the Power Hour. Go on the main page. Like us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. You know the drill, guys. But until next week, don't forget,